Okay. Hey, everyone. I want to thank you for another episode today of That's All Funny. We got a great guest today. My guest today is author and co-author of 182 traditionally published children's books, such as The Bailey School Kids and Mermaid Tales, Debbie Dady. Hey, how you doing, Debbie?
Great. And it's nice to be here with you today. Thanks, Lorenzo.
No, thank you. Let me start by saying you were a big part of my childhood reading your books because I was too scared of Goosebumps. Okay. So I loved reading your books because they had a nice little twist to them, such as like you, Nancy Drew, anything by Roald Dahl, his children's books. So I appreciate you so much as far as me growing up reading those Bailey School Kids. They're a big influence on me and any writing I do too.
Well, thank you so much. Actually, I think the Bailey School Kids came out a little bit before Goosebumps. So who knows? Maybe we inspired Goosebumps. I don't know.
Maybe. I know he was doing like Eureka's Castle before and he didn't, you know, these were just too scary for me. I'll say that as a kid, I was just too scared. So I loved your books. And like I said, Carolyn Keene, Roald Dahl, I loved they're inspiring to me. I'd say growing up, were you always inspired to be a writer or did you have any other aspirations?
I was a reader, you know, the kid under the covers in the bathtub, you know, sorry books, that's not a good thing, and at the supper table with the book in my lap, you know, food on the book, that's not a good thing. So I grew up to become a teacher and a librarian and was really mad about those soggy books at that point. No, but I was so, I guess it was a teacher and a librarian, my goal was to find books. You know, there had to be a book that this kid who did not like to read would read. You know, there just had to be that book. And, you know, as I began thinking about writing, that's the kind of book I wanted to write, something that would draw out, hopefully, even the most reluctant reader, that they would, you know, something would draw them in.
Okay, no. And as far as like your inspiration for the Bailey School Kids, it's such a simple yet complicated formula, you know, like, and like I said, it personally influenced a lot of twist plots that I may have like written and things. How did you come up with that idea for the Bailey School Kids?
Well, it was a really bad day. My friend Marcia Jones and I, we wrote the Bailey School Kids together. We had been writing for like about a year and a half. And every day we'd sit down at our lunch table at the school cafeteria and we'd write stories together because she taught and I was a school librarian. And then one day, it was, you know, one of those days where nobody at school wants to behave and kids were goofing off big time. And I went over to get Marcia to go to lunch together and she was standing at the door of her classroom and she said, you know, these kids are driving me crazy. I think I'd have to be some kind of monster teacher and have horns and things, have steamroll at me or shoot up 15 feet tall. And then maybe, just maybe, these kids would pay attention to me. And when she said that, I went, you know what, Marcia? I like that idea. So we put away this real serious story we'd been working on about this teacher dying, you know, because we thought, oh, well, you know, we want to win the Newbery Medal and somebody has to die and, you know, to get for that kind of book. So we put that away and we started writing something we really enjoyed doing. And that was turned out to be the first book in the Bailey School Kids series about. And when we actually wrote it, it was Vampires Don't Wear Polka Dots. We had Mrs. Deepers turn into a vampire monster right at the end of the story. So there was no doubt she was a vampire. But when it came to Scholastic, they said, you know, that ending, we really think that's too scary for kids in elementary school. So they asked us to change the ending so that it was the way it is in the story now.
No, I love that. No, and how does it feel, because I know you've written books by yourself and with a co-author, he just said, how does it feel working with a co-author? Are there any, like, especially back, well, you worked with her, but back in the day when there were no cell phones or Zoom, you know, it was a lot harder to communicate. How is it working with a co-author? Was it harder? Was it better? You could jump ideas off of each other with? How did you feel with that?
Well, when we first started writing, we were teaching at the same school. So we would meet every day at lunchtime and then we'd like, okay, this will be your homework. You could take it home and you'd work on the next, you know, we'd trade up. Since we were both working full time, you know, I my son Nathan was getting ready to be born, and soon to have another baby. We were busy people, so this really helped us to actually, you know, keep writing, and we kind of checked up on each other, you know, kept each other going and supported each other because we got rejections. Whoops. We wrote for a year and a half before we sold the first book in the Bailey School Kids series, which was really amazing that it happened in that short of a period of time. But during that time, we wrote a lot and we got a lot of rejections. But having somebody to partner with like that, to collaborate with, was really a great learning experience for me, because Marsha Jones was very organized, and I like to be organized, or I pretend to be organized, but I'm not anywhere near as organized as Marsha is and was. And she, you know, would help us to structure our story, and between the two of us, she had one style and I had another style. We came together to make that a new style. So we supported each other in that way. And I think we kept each other from quitting, because it's so easy to quit when you're a writer and you're all by yourself and you get these rejections. You're like, oh, I'm just going to give up. So we kept each other from quitting. And I think that was a real encouragement. And we started writing together, but then I moved away. I moved to Texas, and we ended up thinking, well, that's it. I can remember crying on her. She came to my house to say goodbye, and we were crying on my doorstep, and we're like, oh, this is it. We'll never see each other again. And then Scholastic said, when I moved to Texas, we got the call. I guess it was a call. Couldn't have been email, because email wasn't even a thing.
Yeah, barely.
I don't think. Or if it was, it was very new. But
maybe
anyway,
we got the
message that Scholastic wanted to make the Bailey School Kids into a series. Up until that point, it had just been book. And they were called companion books. And the sixth one was Frankenstein Doesn't Plant Petunias. And we were revising that long distance using a fax machine. And that's how we ended up doing several of the Bailey School Kids, faxing things back and forth. And then we, of course, used emails, which was a great way to collaborate.
Oh, yeah. No, that's amazing. Like you said, both of you had full-time jobs. At any time you could have said, oh, no, we don't need to. This is just for fun at this point, or just for extra. With rejection, yeah, you could just say, oh, well, let's just go back to our regular jobs.
I wouldn't say we did it for fun, but we also did it because we were poor teachers. We taught at a private school making not very much money. So, and my husband was in school. So, we weren't doing it just for kicks, but we had dreams.
Okay.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. And as far as you writing, what's your go-to setup like? Like, do you have a little nook where you write? Do you get your cup of coffee? Do you put on some music? How do you get prepped into that space where you're like, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write? And do you write like for 8 hours a day? Do you have like a certain ritual when you are about to go into writing mode?
Well, I wish I had the energy to write 8 hours a day, but at first I was writing late at night because I was working full time. And, you know, after I put my son to bed, that would be my writing time. My husband would watch TV and I would do my writing. And then sometimes early in the morning, but usually late at night. And then I first started writing sitting on a bed with the word processor sitting on a table beside me. I didn't actually have a chair because the room wasn't big enough for a chair. So I, you know, that was how I started writing. And then several houses later, several houses later, I actually had a room. Woohoo! It was an office. So now I have an office. We just moved to New Hampshire and been trying to set up my office. So now I have an office. It's upstairs in our room, and I have a nice view of some trees out the window. I do usually write in the morning now. I do busy work, checking emails and doing a little bit of social media, which I'm very bad at, but I try. Then I start working, and I usually take a break at 10 o'clock, walk my two greyhounds, and then take a lunch break, and then do a little bit more in the afternoon. I've always usually ended my writing day about 3-ish, because that's when the kids would come home from school, and I just got into that habit of finishing writing around 3 o'clock, but sometimes some busy work after that. So I do not write for 8 hours. I think I may have a little, I don't know, ADD or whatever. I have to 30 minutes usually, and I have to do something else. And then, but you know, that's still in your head, even if you're doing something else, you know, washing dishes or whatever, it's still in your head, and you're still working on it, I think. So that even take walking away for a few minutes to put clothes in the laundry or whatever, gives me a chance to, well, think about what I was writing and maybe do some more. So I'll come back and, you know, maybe work for an hour or whatever, but I'm not one of those people who can sit down 8 hours and just keep going. I have to take breaks and refresh myself.
I imagine too, like you said, it's always going on in your head that you might have a story, idea you written like 15, maybe 20 years ago in your head, and suddenly, oh, the next plot point hits in your head and you want to start on that idea again or something. I can imagine that, you know, just washing the dishes or doing the laundry, like, oh, that story I just have in my head over and over again.
No, my husband used to get irritated me because I'd leave notes all around. Well, I've got notes all over my desk right now. Notes everywhere, you know, okay, oh, this, oh, that. And like, you know, why do you do that? I'm like, well, I don't know. I can't help myself.
No, it's like a physical interpretation of what's going on in your head. There's these ideas here, and they're almost ready. You just need that one little extra whatever, and it they're there just for you, you know. I was gonna ask, I'm not sure if you could narrow it down to just one book or maybe even just a series, but what book in your career it span, you know, so long are you most proud of writing?
Oh, wow. Most proud. Well, I think hard to narrow down just one. Vampires Don't Wear Polka Dots, because it was our first one. And that was pretty exciting. I worked on one book called Whistler's Hollow for 8 years. So that one I was pretty proud of, because it was based on a story about my grandmother and something that happened to her when she was a little kid, the story that she had told me. But I guess The Bailey School Kids is probably my favorite series, with The Mermaid Tales next, because I worked on those the longest, both of those. So, The Adventures of the Bailey School Kids, I wrote with my friend Marcia. The Bailey School Kids, I wrote by myself, but those are the series, I guess, that I would be most proud of. But another book that really meant a lot to me, and I just was kind of like obsessed to writing it. And that was called Never Give Up, Dr. Katie Carrico and the Race for the Future of Vaccines. Because I read this article during COVID about this lady who had spent her whole life, basically almost like 40 years, working on this one technology that people told her it'll never work. Give it up. She was fired from Temple University because her research was dead end. It would never amount to anything. She was demoted from University of Pennsylvania because of the same reason. And lo and behold, mRNA technology save many, many lives due to the COVID vaccine. And she's determined to make that vaccine, that technology help people in other ways too. So she's like my hero. And so I wrote that book about her.
No, that's amazing. Yeah. No, I saw on your website that book and I was like, oh, wow, this is an amazing like story, you know?
Yeah, she's amazing. Well, she's alive today. She is an amazing woman. She grew up in a one room house with a dirt floor, and through all that, she never gave up. So that's the reason for the name of the story. But oh, no. I thought she's pretty amazing.
No, that's amazing. And in this is sort of like a what if question. Is there any other genre you would love to write for? Or do you plan to write for? Is there something like in another universe? You're like, I wish I would have written like, what would you say? Those mystery thrillers or something like that, you know?
Well, funny you should say that. I've been working on a story, I don't even know how many years now. Because it's gone through like so many different lives, the story itself. I was thinking today, it's gone through three different titles and different main characters, but I'm still working on it. It's a YA rom-com. So if that's not different, I don't know what is.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know what got into me to want to write this, but I guess I kind of know because when I was a little kid, my dad used to like Westerns and I would watch them with him and, you know, sit together with him and we'd eat popcorn together. And it was, you know, a real bonding thing kind of. And so I guess I kind of like Westerns, old West stories. And of course I like Star Wars and what is that but a Western? I don't know. For some reason, I just started writing it one day and haven't stopped.
That's great. No, I look forward to that. No, that'd be great to read.
Comes of it, but I'm having fun with it. So, editors, if you're interested, I've been working on it.
No, that's amazing. Well, and I'd say this is kind of one of those scary questions. What's your opinion on the way you look at it? What's your opinion on AI and the way it's evolving in the creative spaces of maybe writing or any type of art?
Well, being old school, I didn't really even know about AI. But not too long ago, my oldest son sat me down. He said, let me show you something. So he typed in something like story about whatever. And there's this whole story that forms. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. That's kind of kind of scary in a way for a writer. Who knows? But it is a little scary technology wise, but I still think there'll always be room for fresh and creative ideas. I hope.
Oh yeah. No, it's just, I mean, you could use it like that, but it really is just a tool. And I'm sure you could literally type in do a Bailey School Kids type story and it would pull up, you know, it would start. Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Although there have been plenty of people who have used the title pattern for other books. I've seen that.
Oh no, it's almost like to me like a prompt. Like I've literally thought of ideas and it's like, no, it's like a Bailey School Kids type where it is, but it's not, but it, you know, it twists, it's a twisty, you know, and I just love the idea of it going back to it, growing up on it.
We use that pattern for the titles because when the first book came out, we were like, oh, yay, this is so exciting. And then we thought maybe we could do it again. And so we wanted to write about the same characters, but we're like, well, it's not a series. How would people know, you know, it was about the same characters if we didn't make something like about it? So that's how we came up with a pattern. A werewolves don't go to summer camp. Vampires don't wear polka dots. Santa Claus doesn't mop floors. So we kept that negative vibe going. And then we had a spinoff series called the Bailey School Kids Junior Chapter Books. And we had a positive. We had ghosts do stomp in puddles. Reindeer do wear striped underwear. So we had the do to make them similar, but still a little different.
No, that's great. And what advice would you give to authors today, you know, wanting to write children's books in a time where like children's books are right now, and they've always been very influential. I know a lot of books I've read growing up are still with me. How is it nowadays? What advice would you give to the authors right now who are wanting to write children's books at a time where it's, you know, very important, the influence you have on children, you know?
Well, I think probably the same advice I would have given years ago, too. I mean, even though times have changed, I think it's still important to know the market, to write what you love, but to also be aware of, well, this kind of book is not selling anymore, you know, like didactic kind of things, or that's kind of gone long, long ago. But to write something that you that really, you know, inspires you, that you're really excited about, and like that Never Give Up book, I was just like, I had to write that story. I was like, somebody needs to write that story. And I'm like, well, I'm a writer. Ah! Yeah, I can do that. I've never written a biography about a living person before. And it was quite a challenge. But I think it has to be something you're passionate about, something that you think kids would be passionate about. What do kids like now, as opposed to maybe when you were little? But the surprising thing is, I think kids today still want to have friends, just like they did 50 years ago. Kids still want their parents to love them, just like they did 50 years ago. They want somebody to love them. You know, they still want a pet, maybe. You know, a lot of the things, while we've changed so much, there's still a lot of things that are the same. And those are the things that I think are timeless to write about.
No, absolutely. No, and that's great advice. And I want to thank you for your time. And I hope nothing but further continued success for you. I know people can find you on Twitter at Debbie Dayday, and your website, DebbieDaydee.com.
And on Facebook and LinkedIn. And I also actually put on a little plug for my friend Marsha and myself. If we did write a book about everything we wish we'd known when we first started writing, Writing for Kids, The Ultimate Guide, which is on Kindle. Amazon, so.
Oh, okay. No, I'll have to check that out. And again, I want to thank you so much for your time. I hope nothing but continued success. And yeah, thank you so much for being such a great influence on childhoods.
Oh, thanks, Lorenzo. It's nice chatting with you.
Oh, you too. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.